Today's Teisho will be on the 97th koan in the records of the transmission of the Lamb. The 97th koan is entitled Chan Master Li Zhu Mingzhi Dao Jing. Chan Master Dao Jing of Mingzhi in Lizhu, Hunan, once said, "I have a great sickness for which there is no cure in the whole world." Later, a monk asked Zhen Kaoshan, "Once an ancient worthy person said, 'I have a great sickness for which there is no cure in the whole world. I have not yet penetrated this. What might the sickness be called?'" Cao replied, "It is a collective, indefinite sickness." "Do not all living beings have this sickness?" answered the monk. "Everyone has it," said Cao. "If everyone has it, does the venerable monk also have it?" asked the monk. "Look directly into the place of its arising. You won't find it," Cao said. "Why are all living beings not sick then?" asked the monk. "If living beings were sick, they would not be living beings," replied Cao. "I have not yet understood. Do all the Buddhas have this sickness too?" "They do," replied Cao. "Since they have it, why are they not sick?" asked the monk. "Because they understand," said Cao. When the Buddha first taught after his enlightenment, people understood his teaching in terms of their own life experience and in terms of their own circumstances and education. So, the Buddha is supposed to have had his Great Awakening experience and has said, after having it, "This experience is so extraordinary that no one would ever understand it if I tried to tell them about it." And then at that moment, a god named Sahampati, a deva named Sahampati, appeared to him and said, "If you, of all people, don't try to help, now that you've had this great experience, if you, of all people, don't try to help other people, the world is lost." He said, "You should not be so sure that there won't be people who come after you who will understand what you have experienced." And so the Buddha set out into the world to teach his path to other people. And the people who first heard what the Buddha had to say understood it in terms of their own life experience. So they understood the Buddha as saying that if you have fallen into confusion, and if you are living in a state of ignorance, you can remedy that ignorance by practicing meditation and observing the precepts, following the Eightfold Path. This was very powerful teaching for people at the time of the Buddha's life. And many, many tens of thousands of women and men became bhikshunis and bhikshus, monks and nuns, and practiced this path rigorously and achieved awakening. There are collections of teachings, collections of stories, I should say, for example, about all of the monks and nuns who achieved awakening and their different lives and the moment that they achieved awakening. We have whole books of these stories. There's one called the Theragata for the monks and the Therigata for the nuns. And they're very moving if you ever have a chance to read it. So, you know, Buddhism flourished for a long time, but, you know, there might have been a fundamental misunderstanding in this early way of early Buddhism, you know. Because, you know, another teaching of Buddha, of Buddhism, is that there is no essential self. You know, and this is something the Buddha taught right from the beginning. There is no essential self. There is no essential self. So if we have a self, it's because of our interactions with everything around us. You know, so if you think about it, you wouldn't be who you are if your father wasn't your father and your mother wasn't your mother. You might, if you were like me when you were a teenager, you often fantasized that your father and mother weren't your real father and mother. And I'm sure they were fantasizing that I wasn't their real kid. And they were praying that there had been a mix-up at the hospital. Nevertheless, you know, without my mother and my father, I would not be who I was. And we can play an imaginary game, but it's inconceivable that if our life was different, we would be who we are right now. So you know, from the Buddhist standpoint, all the things that have been part of your life have created what you call the self right now. And there isn't something else there. See, there isn't something else there other than all of those events. And you are the creation of all of those events. And at the core of yourself, according to Buddha's teaching, you're like bamboo. There's really nothing there. It's just the events that make you who you are. You know, so if this is true, then it's really not the case that a person, as an individual, can free himself from ignorance and achieve awakening. See? That basically, I am not really responsible for all of my problems. I'm really not. You know, it took a whole society to, it takes a whole society to screw us up. And it takes a whole society, actually, to make us well, you know. I wonder if I'm making any sense this morning. But if you are just the sum of all your life experiences, then, you know, really you can't say, I did it to myself, right? We could say, we did it to ourselves. We did it to ourselves. You know, so once these people in the Buddhist world began to understand this, it completely changed the way they understood practice. You know, you can meditate every day, and then you can turn on TV, and, you know, you can watch all kinds of things on TV. And you can imagine that you're not affected by what you see on TV, but there isn't any self there except what you're watching on TV at that moment. You know, so it's really not so easy to draw a line between yourself and the world around you. You know, and when early Buddhists practiced meditation, practiced the way, they thought they were securing their own liberation. But Buddhists in our tradition, the Mahayana, understand that there is no such thing as individual liberation. And there is no such thing as individual enlightenment. You know, basically, we all are in this together. All are in this together. We are all responsible for the mess, and we all have to clean it up. And when you are meditating, you're not just cleaning up your mess, you're cleaning up everybody else's mess too. You know, so on your cushion is your mother and your father and your grandfather and your grandmother and all the people you've ever known and everybody who has contributed to making you who you are. That's the Mahayana view. So, you know, if you look at your society, if we look at our society today, we have to admit that it's not healthy, right? We have a president of the United States who is probably insane, you know, but who is certainly morally bankrupt, you know, dishonest. He never speaks the truth. And you know, if we're honest about it, you know, our society is not a healthy place. It's not as though Trump is responsible for Trump. You know, it took a whole society to make Trump. And Trump is not really the cause of anything. He's just a reflection of all these social forces in our society. You know, so I think, you know, we want to believe that everything is okay in our world. We want to believe that basically, you know, the society we live in is fundamentally trustworthy, right? Fundamentally trustworthy. But it's not fundamentally trustworthy. It's not. You know, I saw a video somebody sent me, and it was a person who, it was a psychology experiment that involved group behavior. And one person was, basically a person was sent to a doctor's office, and the person was not aware that it was an experiment. They were just asked to go. They were asked to go to the doctor's office, and there were other people, including patients in the doctor's office, who were in on the experiment. And what happened was that when a bell would ring in the doctor's office, everybody except a person who was not in on the experiment would stand up and then sit down. So this person is waiting for a doctor, right? And a bell goes off, and everybody stands up. And the person's reading, like, his Time magazine. And he looks around, and he notices once everybody's standing up, and then they sit down. And then a bell goes off, and everybody stands up, and they sit down. And he notices this, and after a while, you won't believe it, but after a while, the bell rings, and he stands up, right, with everybody else. And then he sits down. And then the bell rings, and they all stand up, and they all sit down. And I couldn't believe it, but this apparently is on the level. This is apparently... Now, the interesting thing is that all the patients go in to see the doctor, and that person who isn't in on the experiment was the last one. And now, when that person hears the bell, he stands up and he sits down, just like everybody else, waiting for the doctor. Another patient comes in, who's in on the experiment, who knows about it, and when the bell rings, the person stands up and sits down, and the new arrival doesn't stand up. But the person who has been there for a while says, no, no, you should stand up. Nobody knows why, right? Nobody knows why. See? So we want to believe, right, that the society we live in is a healthy society, but it's not. And when we see somebody like Trump, we see like a terrible example, like this egregious example of a screwed up society, right? And we say, oh, well, he's different. He's the exception. But you know, basically, people are all standing up together in this unhealthy society. We all share these values. And even people who don't like Trump share many of his values. So, you know, I was very distressed to see the videotapes of the Charlottesville demonstrations that people who represented my values were also engaging in violence, you know. In fact, I saw a photo of somebody who was on the anti-Trump side spraying somebody on the Trump side. He had a lighter, and he was using a can of hairspray, so he had made a little napalm gun, right? And I certainly don't agree with the president that both sides were equally bad. That's not what I'm saying. But I definitely think that we all participate in this unhealthy society. You know, so how does the how does the teacher, how does this, this is a, one of the best koans in the world. Master Dao Jing of Mingzhu once said, I have a great sickness for which there is no cure in the whole world. Now that, later a monk who had heard that Zen master say that, asked another Zen master. He said, once a great Zen master said, I have a sickness for which there is no cure in the whole world. I have not yet penetrated this. What could this sickness be? And so on. See, I mean, you know, we want to believe that we are a health, we are the sane one, and we are the healthy one. And we also want to believe our culture is basically sane and healthy, but when we have events like the ones that are around us right now, surrounding us, you know, we realize this culture is in a real deep confusion on so many levels, right? And we may feel, you know, that we don't participate in this, but we're all in this system together. You know, we have imbibed many of the same values as the people we look at across the street who are carrying the Make American Great signs, you know. You know, there's a generalized sickness, right? I think that really is true. And so, you know, I think people are very naive about this, you know, if I may say so. You know, in my opinion, it takes a great deal of effort to be a good person. It takes like a great deal of effort to be a good person. I think we automatically think that basically you're a good person. You're a good person. Most people are good people. I'm not sure that they're either good or bad. You know, I'm not sure they're good people. I think it takes a lot of effort to be a good person. I think the Buddha said, you know, basically, if you want to be a good person, you have to walk the Eightfold Path. There are certainly people who don't walk the Buddha's path who are good people, but I think people who are good people work on themselves and make themselves better people in some way, you know. In some way, they have a practice. You know, today our practice is zazen, but you know those people have a practice too. Maybe it's the practice of generosity. Maybe it's the practice of taking care of others. You know, we don't know what their practices are, but it's definitely the case that we have to make an effort to be good people. And I do think Americans are very naive about this. When somebody like Trump comes along, you know, we're always astonished. But, you know, in a way, in a certain way, you know, we all have a certain Trump-like quality in our worst moments. You know, we all have a certain Trump-like quality. You know, it was so shocking for me to see the violence of people who were anti-fascists at that demonstration, but it shouldn't have surprised me, right? I mean, basically, you have to work on yourself to be a good person. And when Trump arises, it surprises us, but it just reminds us of how screwed up our society is. But you know, when Trump is alone by himself, and Trump looks in his heart, Trump sees nothing but, I suspect, when Trump looks in his heart, he sees nothing but goodness. I really believe that. You know, when Trump looks in his heart, he sees nothing but goodness because Trump, and Trump is constantly acting from a place where he feels like he's a good man who's being abused. I'm basically a good man. And my enemies are picking on me, even though I'm basically a good man. And I don't think it's an act. I think when he looks in his heart, he sees nothing but goodness. You know, that's why our situation is so complicated. You know, so complicated. Because, you know, when we sit down and we're quiet with ourselves, we can't see our obstacles. We can't see that. You know, all we see when we look into ourselves is probably like good person. And I think Trump sees nothing but purity when he looks in his heart. You know, part of what we do on the cushion is encounter our Trump-like aspects, or our fear, or our attachments, our greed, our envy, our lust. You know, those are all things that we hide from ourselves. You know, and when we look into our hearts, you know, we see nothing but goodness. But when you sit down on the cushion and you do zazen for a few days, you begin to realize, okay, I'm not a bad person, but I do have fear. You know, I act a lot of the time from fear. Or I act a lot of the time in anger. You know, or I have a lot of resentments. You know, or I feel very much like a victim, you know. I don't like other people. And I just don't like people. You know, all these things come up on the cushion, right? You might think, where does this come from? I remember working with Genki Roshi, and I had this idea that I wanted to be a Buddha. I wanted to be an enlightened being. I did, and I still do. I practice every day. When I was around Genki Roshi, I was always smiling, calm, friendly, and I was acting in Genki Roshi's presence in the way I really wanted to be. You know, I didn't want to be angry and fearful. I wanted to be kind, patient, calm. And when I was around Genki Roshi, that's how I always behaved. But inside of myself, there were other things going on. There's a lot of fear, a lot of anger. And I didn't see it, you know. And I remember working on this one koan. And halfway through the koan, I was so pissed off. I was just furious. I remember thinking, this Zen is a total scam, you know. This is a scam, you know. And I went in to see Genki Roshi, and I was just furious. And I said, you know, I'm going to quit Zen. This is the biggest bunch of bullshit. You know, you're a fraud, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Webb used to translate for him, and they both started laughing, you know, because this was what the koan was about. You know, it was, this is in you, sir. You know, this is in you, you know. Now look, it's not an occasion for shame, right? I mean, look, we all have this, we all have these things inside of us that we have to work through. But it's very difficult to be truly compassionate when you're motivated by the desire to hide your fear, or to hide your anger, or to hide your resentment, right? You know, you can't make yourself necessarily a better person just by doing good things, actually. You know, we have to work through we have to encounter our trumps on the cushion. You know, our trump-like qualities that we hide from ourselves. And when we encounter our trump-like qualities, you know, we meet them, we acknowledge their existence, and now it's possible to be more fully awake. You know, and so this practice of Zen is really about, it's not just about being serene, right? It's not about being saintly, right? It's about encountering our obstacles, the people inside ourselves we don't want to be, who are there, and are part of us, right? And meeting them again, after many years, or after some amount of time, and acknowledging them, understanding them with compassion, and then going on to encounter the next one, you know. And this process goes on and on, but eventually we become awake. But awake means aware of all of these things in ourself, right? Aware of all of these things in ourself. It might sound trivial to say, you know, there's a Trump in me, there's a Trump in you. But you know, that's the last thing, especially if we don't like Trump, it's the last thing we want to admit, but you know, there is a Trump in me, and there's a Trump in you. You know, or somebody like that, you know. And we have to meet them, encounter them, respond to them with compassion, and go on. So, you know, a lot of Zen practice is about admitting, you know, that, you know, there's a generalized sickness in our society, yes, but also in, you know, the human condition to some degree, there's a generalized sickness. You know, it's true, Zen says all people possess Buddha nature. That is definitely so. And it's definitely true that at the heart of your consciousness there is this Buddha, this enlightened mind. That's definitely true. But the other side of the picture is that people will not be good people unless they cultivate themselves in some way. You know, and so we've come to Sesshin to cultivate ourselves, right? To cultivate ourselves. To make ourselves Buddhas. And a Buddha, you know, you might imagine Buddha many different ways, but a Buddha is a person who is able to act from the place of compassion under all conditions. See? So, you know, in Buddhist mythology, the Buddha has omniscience, etc., etc., but, you know, those are hardly any help. You know, what makes a Buddha is the ability to respond with compassion under all conditions. I have to tell you, I'm not there yet. You know, definitely not. And if you're honest with yourself, probably not there yet, right? But working on it. And the way to work on it, one way to work on it is to do good things for people. But another one is not to pretend to be compassionate, but to encounter our Trump-like obstacles and work through them. See, and this is a process that can be challenging. You know, nobody likes to be, say, in physical pain, right? I mean, that's the most elementary kind of challenge. You know, nobody likes to have their legs hurt. Nobody likes to be in physical pain. And when people are in physical pain, sometimes they become very Trump-like. You know, very angry. You know, I've definitely met people who get really angry about being in physical pain on the cushion. You might have moments where you feel like throwing something across the room. You know, but you know, you realize, you know, you learn how to respond to your suffering in a different way, right? Actually, with compassion. You know, one of the reasons that we might feel anger when we have physical pain is that we might have an image of ourselves as not deserving physical pain, right? I mean, we might feel that we should be able to get to a place which is godlike and does not feel physical pain. But, you know, actually, if you have a body, you're going to feel physical pain. And the interesting thing is that, you know, if you sit with your pain for a few days, it's very liberating. You know, you become incredibly tender-hearted. You know, and you become very open. People become very, very open. And part of that is that they learn to, they forgive themselves, basically, for having pain. For not being all-powerful, not being godlike, you know. And the truth is, often we're trying to act as though we're all-powerful and godlike, right? You know, there are definitely people who would hate this koan. If I said there's a generalized sickness and we're all sick, there are definitely people who would get angry at me and would say, "Wow, I'm not sick. You know, you might be sick, but I'm not sick," you know. And of course, I would rest my case, right? You know, that was just the point. They want to be in a place where they can't be vulnerable to criticism or mistaken or suffering or in pain or tired, right? You know, but actually that embracing your suffering, you know, it's part of who we are. You know, we're human beings, we have bodies, we get sick all the time, you know. That's what happens to people with bodies. But on the other hand, you know, if you can forgive yourself for being a physical being, for having pain, you know, when you step outside and you hear the birds or you feel the breeze in your face or the smell, the fragrance of the flowers, it's so precious to have a body if you can forgive yourself for not being godlike, you know. And, you know, if you are working through your obstacles, you know, you might find that it's very difficult at times to admit, you know, that you have anger or that you have fear, you know, because we want to be Buddha-like and God-like. But when we admit we have fear, we have anger, you know, that, you know, you start, once you do that, you know, you can forgive yourself, you know, for not being perfect. And if you can forgive yourself for not being perfect, you can forgive anyone for not being perfect. See, that's compassion. Compassion doesn't come from a place that's perfect. It comes from the place where we encounter our imperfections and we have forgiven ourselves for them. You know, so, you know, I often see this in school. You know, when you're learning to write well, you learn not to make mistakes, you know. So if you make a grammatical mistake, your teacher might get on your case very energetically, you know. So, for example, you know, it's in English grammar. It's not between you and I; it's between you and me. See. So, you know, I remember that I used to say between you and me, and my father would flip out. He'd get very angry. He'd actually get angry about this. And he'd say, it's not between you and me. It's not between you and I. It's between you and me, you know. And I'm sure his parents had screamed at him about this, right? And he was like terrified somebody was going to make this mistake in his family, I guess. The point is, he had been humiliated over a point of language. And he was humiliating me over a point of language. And I see this all the time in teachers, you know. When they see their students making the mistakes they used to make, they flip out. They will write insulting comments in the margin of the paper. They'll underline the mistake with red ink, you know. So much anger. Well, this comes from not forgiving themselves, right? Not forgiving themselves. You know, I will never forget, I had a chance to do some editing for a journal. And all of these like top guys would send stuff into the journal, and my job was to be like an editor. And these were like some of the best philosophers in the English-speaking world, and they would all make grammatical mistakes. You know, it's like, and the editor said, sure, they do it all. They expect you to clean it up, you know. They don't worry, you know, they've forgiven themselves, you know. They don't care, you know. I remember once hearing a very distinguished lecturer talk about this guy. He was recalling events in a story, and he said at the end of the story, the man goes down to the river and stands and looks at the river, and then his paper was over. And then somebody stuck up his hand and said, Professor, you know, Haworth, he doesn't go down to the river. He turns around before he gets to the river. Now, if I had been that professor, I would have thought, oh my God, you stupid idiot. You know, why did you make that mistake? Instead, he just laughed. He said, oh, you know, you're right. I forgot. End of story, right? He was a person who was able, he was able to forgive himself for making mistakes, right? He was somebody who must have, in some way in his life, found that ability to be compassionate towards himself. And I'm sure as a teacher, he was a really compassionate teacher because he wasn't hiding things in himself that he was afraid of or ashamed of, right? So you know, Zen practice is about encounter. We all have like the generalized sickness. There's a little Trump in all of us. But we came here because we don't want to go that route, down that dark road, right? And Trump didn't become Trump. He wasn't born Trump. You know, Trump made himself Trump, one choice after another. You know, the Dalai Lama, if you had taken the baby Donald Trump and you had put the baby Donald Trump in the Podla Palace, and you took the baby Dalai Lama and you put him in Astoria, Queens or something, in Trump's bed, you know, mixed him up, it's true, the orange hair would have been a tip-off. Nevertheless, you know, if Donald Trump had been raised the way the Dalai Lama was raised, he would be, I'm quite convinced, like the Dalai Lama. And if the Dalai Lama were raised the way Trump was raised, he would be, I'm quite convinced, pretty much like Trump, you know. So, you know, the Dalai Lama gets up every day and he does his meditation. In fact, he meditates 3 or 4 hours a day. Now you can say, well, look, he's had his Great Awakening experience long ago. What karma does he have left to clean up? Well, there's 8 billion people in the world. That's a lot of karma to clean up. If we're all interconnected, then, you know, it's naive to think that we aren't part of these crazy loops that everybody gets caught in. You know, you're purifying your mind, and you're purifying everybody else's mind, too. You know, so we people who follow the Mahayana have taken a vow not to stop cultivating ourselves until everybody is awake. And this sounds like a very heroic vow, but actually there's no other way to practice. You know, somebody else's ignorance spills over into your life all the time. But it's also true that somebody else's goodness spills over into your life all the time. So, you know, when we meditate, we're not just meditating for ourselves, because we're interconnected. We're cleaning up the generalized karma of this crazy world. And if people don't do this, the world will get worse and worse. So it's possible to say that what we're doing here is very unimportant. You know, it's a Murray Grove Conference Center, Retreating Conference Center in Lenoka Harbor. But this is the only way the world will be a better place, is if people do things like this. Our way is Zazen. Our way is to work through our obstacles on the cushion. And it's a challenging situation for everybody. You know, I've been reading... I was reading about the great master Naropa, the great Indian master Naropa. Naropa was a top scholar at Nalanda University, the Buddhist university in India, and he realized that he had studied Buddhism by reading books, but he had not really worked through his obstacles. And he was like the dean of Nalanda University, but he actually had a dream about a person named Tilopa. And he had heard about Tilopa, but in his dream he met Tilopa, and he actually resigned his job as the dean of Nalanda University. And he went looking for Tilopa. And Tilopa was all of these things that were like repugnant to Naropa. You know, so Tilopa, actually was lived on this island with all of these stray dogs, you know. And Tilopa was a deeply enlightened person, but he lived on this island with all of these stray dogs. And when Naropa talk to Tilopa, all of these dogs started snapping at him and growling. And as he was walking, you know, of course, he was stepping on dog poop and so on. It was a totally revolting situation. And at first, you know, according to the legend, you know, when Tilopa started speaking, Naropa couldn't understand him. And he found Naropa to be like physically repulsive person. But then he said, all of a sudden, it was like he could hear Tilopa's words became clear to him, and his heart was filled with love, right? You know, so I think one point in the story is that, you know, we can't be liberated by just thinking good thoughts, you know. We can't even be liberated by reading the sutras. You know, we can only be liberated by encountering our obstacles and working through them, and that's always challenging. It's always a little bit difficult. You know, the path to being a more fully awake and compassionate person is through our obstacles, through the things we don't like or don't want to confront. And that starts with pain in our legs, but it becomes more elaborate as we go along. But we've come to Sesshin to purify our body, heart, and mind. And not just our body, heart, and mind, but the body, heart, and mind of our parents and their parents and our neighbors and all the people we know and all the people we care about and all the people we don't care about. So it's a big job, but somebody has got to do it. And I thank you so much for doing such good work so far. So please, this is day one of Sesshin. Let us go deep into samadhi and begin this work. Chan Master Dao Jing of Mingzhe in Lizhou once said, "I have a great sickness for which there is no cure in the whole world." Later, a monk asked Zhang Kaoshan, "Once an agent worthy said, 'I have a great sickness for which there is no cure in the whole world. I have not yet penetrated this. What might the sickness be called?' Cao replied, 'It is a collective, indefinite sickness.' 'Do not all living beings have this sickness?' asked the monk. 'Everyone has it,' said Cao. 'Everyone has it. Does the venerable monk have it also?' asked the monk. Look directly into the place of its arising. At the core of your being, there's pure Buddha nature," said Cao. "So why are all living beings not sick then?" asked the monk. "If living beings were sick, there would not be living beings," replied Cao. "I have not understood. Do all the Buddhas have this sickness too?" "They do. Since they have it, why are they not sick?" "Because they understand."